This is Shuffle, your backstage pass to Northeast Ohio's music scene. I'm Brittany Nader. My guest today is Alec Whiteman, who's a corporate lawyer and longtime music fan. Alec was the board chair at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a concert promoter in Columbus, Ohio. He published his first book this year called Music in My Life, Notes from a Longtime Fan, which he wrote during the pandemic. In the memoir, he chronicles his journey through discovering music as a child and later meeting icons like Bruce Springsteen and Rod Stewart. His book's available at the Rock Hall gift shop, and the museum's got a lot of events going on this week in preparation for the 2021 induction ceremony on October 30th. You're a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame board, and I just wanted to ask what that experience has been like, and what's your connection to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and what's it been like?
Well, I've been a passionate music fan my entire life, turned 70 this January, so, you know, 60 years of being a rock and roll fan. And in fact, I've promoted national act singer-songwriter shows in Columbus since 1995. I became the co-executive partner of Baker Hostetler, a big national law firm with its heritage office in Cleveland, in 2004. And when the folks at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame heard about me and the fact that I was not only at that point a successful corporate lawyer, but also promoting shows in Columbus, they asked if I wanted to, you know, meet some folks there, and ultimately got invited to be on the board. And I took it seriously. I chaired the development committee for a number of years, ended up on the executive committee, and then actually chaired the board from 2013 to 2016. And to take it to a bottom line, that would be one of the highlights of my life.
I read that you've been to every induction ceremony since 2005, I think.
I have, yes.
Yeah, that's really cool. How do you feel about this year's class?
Oh, it's going to be, first of all, the class is wonderful. It's not only a collection of, you know, great musicians, it brings diversity by gender, by race, by age, and it's going to be a wonderful show. As you know, the inductions have moved from public auditorium, where they've been held when they've been in Cleveland since 2009. They've been in Cleveland, I think, four times since 2009, mm-hmm. and this year moving to the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. And I think that, you know, the folks who produced the show learned a lot from the pandemic experience, like we all have. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was last year's induction, which was done virtually, it had a lot of aspects to it that were very, very popular. So it's my sense that this year's show is going to be much more of a concert and much less in the way of speeches and non-musical components. A lot of that has been pre-recorded and will be edited, and not unlike you do with a show like this. Mm-hmm. So we'll get the best of that stuff, and then lots and lots of music. And in fact, at the field house, they have the ability to do a circular stage, which they couldn't do at public auditorium. Mm. So while somebody's out front, they're going to be able to be setting up the next act in the back so they can turn the stage and just keep going. It's going to be a great event.
That's really cool. It's interesting to hear your insights, knowing that, like you mentioned, you worked, you had this concert production company. So I'm sure you have a perspective that's maybe a little different from some of the attendees there, as far as like the setup and everything goes.
Well, we don't want to overstate that. I have promoted national act singer songwriters in Columbus, and I've done some wonderful shows. But it's a little different production level, mm-hmm. than putting on an induction ceremony in front of, you know, 15,000 people and millions of television visitors or viewers.
Right, for sure. You know, I'm very curious to know more about your career. You're so involved in the music industry, but then you also do work as a lawyer. So how'd you kind of go down that path?
Oh, you know, I'm pretty much a retired lawyer now, with the exception, mm-hmm. of one little niche practice I developed late in my career. But in my day, I was a very busy corporate lawyer. I had a successful law practice and was heavily involved in law firm management. But I also had a passion for music. And back in 1995, a guy who's, you know, turned out to be a great friend, a singer-songwriter named Tom Russell, talked me into promoting a show for him in Columbus, which I did, and I had so much fun, I continued to do it. And at the peak of my career, as busy as I was, I still was able to do 7, 8, 9 shows a year here in Columbus. And I always joked, people would ask, well, how do you find the time to do that? And I always joked and said that I spent less time and money on it than many of my partners did playing golf.
So. That's a good point. Of course, I have to ask about your book, Music in My Life, Notes from a Longtime Fan. You know, I personally love any music memoir or biography, even if it's about an artist I don't particularly care for or a style of music that maybe I haven't listened to. I love reading these stories. And what I particularly love about your book is that you aren't afraid to really be unabashed in your fandom and love of the subject you're writing about. So why did you decide to write a book like this?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. And I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Of course.
I started writing just for fun. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've got a passion for the art form, for the art, the music, and the artists. And I would tell stories. Mm-hmm. I've got tons of stories from all kinds of experiences, whether it's promoting concerts, whether it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame involvement, or just stuff I've done over the years. And people would say, you ought to write a book. And I just rolled my eyes and never thought seriously about it. Mm-hmm. But back in late 2016, I had a total knee replacement. And even, right up until that point in time, I was still playing pretty serious tennis 3 or 4 times a week. Mm-hmm. And the next year, my wife had a serious health issue. She's fine just now, but, mm-hmm. We were sidetracked for a while. And so I started to write just for fun. And I started by making notes on 3x5 index cards, concerts I had been to, favorite albums, stories I could remember. And I had a pretty thick stack and I'd spread them out and try to figure out how to organize it. And I did that multiple times and settled on chronological with fast forwards. I'm a linear thinker and I kind of moved through the music in my life in a chronological fashion. Mm-hmm. And I started to write. And I suppose ultimately I got a third of the way or so through that stack of cards and I put it down. Two things happened. One, I wanted to write about the music and too much of what I was writing was about my life. And even though at that point in time, I didn't think anybody was going to read it other than my brother, I was just doing it for fun. But I wasn't so happy with that. And then I got to the section on Neil Young. And I know everything about Neil Young. And so I turned it into a Neil Young biography, which is not what I had in mind. So I put it down. I went back at some point and I edited it a little, but still didn't pick up, writing it again until the pandemic. And the middle of March of last year, I didn't have anything else to do. And I thought, oh, what the heck? And so I started to write again. And this time, seriously, I would in my home office where I am right now and write for, a few hours a day. And by the beginning of May, I, had gotten through that stack of index cards. And I set the work to about 6 friends, some of whom were music people, some of whom weren't, and asked what they thought. And I was pleasantly surprised at the level of enthusiasm, but people said, this is a book.
I'm curious, is there an anecdote in the book that you tend to repeat over and over to people?
Oh, there's a couple of favorites. And certainly the promotion of an Art Garfunkel show in Columbus would be at the top of the list. I have promoted National Act Singer-Songwriter shows for 27 years, but none, quite at the of the level of prominence of Art Garfunkel. But on the board of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I've had the pleasure of meeting Jules Belkin, a name probably not unfamiliar to many people in Northeast Ohio, but Jules and his brother Mike had Belkin Productions, which dominated the rock and roll promotion world in the Midwest for decades. And he and I have become friends. He's a little older than me, but he always, I think, thought it was funny that this corporate lawyer in Columbus was promoting shows, again, on a different level than what he had done. But he called me one day and said that he had been friends with Art Garfunkel's manager, the guy who had managed Art since the 60s, and that Art had been off the road for a few years with throat issues, mm-hmm. and that he was looking for a safe 300 person venue to come out and test a new format. He would bring a guitar player, he'd do songs, but he would read poetry, he would tell stories, and he would do a Q&A with the audience. And Jules asked if I wanted to do it in Columbus, which of course was a thrill, and I said I would. And I got in, you know, ended up talking to Art's manager, and he didn't understand, you know, what I did. It was like a foreign world to him. You know, I was a lawyer, not a full-time promoter. Mm-hmm. I didn't run ads. I just sold tickets off a mailing list. You know, I have no accounting system. You know, I was doing it out of a shoebox. But we had fun putting it all together. And sure enough, Art showed up in Columbus, and we did a show. Now, before he showed up, I had put my tickets out for sale on my mailing list, as I always do. I had essentially sold out the house, at least the capacity that I would usually have. And on the Sunday before the show, which I think was on a Thursday night, I got up and saw the Columbus Dispatch. And on the front page of the arts and entertainment section, above the fold, was a picture of Art and an interview with him, and a little sidebar that said, for tickets, call this number. And it was my law office number. And so I thought, oh, you know, this is unbelievable. And I had nothing to do with it. Obviously, Art's people had gotten to the Dispatch. Mm-hmm. And the next day, my office phone started ringing off the hook. And I sold more tickets and more tickets and more tickets until I finally shut it down, I think, on the Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, ended up hiring more security. We rented more chairs. We did what it took to get the people in the door. Art came and did a wonderful show. Highlight of my life, but as I say in the book, a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I can just imagine you, you know, in your law office picking up the phone nonstop. That's funny. Yeah. You know, in your book, you do speak about those Columbus concerts that you put on, but also a bit about Cleveland and concerts that you attended kind of in the heyday of rock and roll in general, you know, like 60s and 70s. And during the 70s in particular, Northeast Ohio really had kind of a spotlight on it with like the Akron sound, you know, the punk rock and stuff like that. So I'm curious your thoughts on how things have kind of changed or evolved for either people who live in Ohio or just musicians touring through the area over the years.
Well, you know, I've spent my life in Ohio, other than the four years I spent at Duke in Durham, North Carolina, from 1968 to 72. But even then, I was at home in the summers, and mm-hmm. home for me was Euclid. I was born and raised in Euclid, Euclid High, class of 68, and ended up in Columbus for law school and stayed put. But, you know, my folks were in Cleveland. I ended up joining a law firm with a big Heritage Cleveland office and getting involved in management, and then ultimately with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So my Cleveland roots were and are very, very deep. Mm-hmm. And yes, you know, growing up in Cleveland in the late 60s and early 70s was very much a heyday of rock. I suppose anybody can look back on the years when they were, you know, in their late teens or early 20s, and the music they knew and loved at the time and consider it the heyday. But for me, that, you know, that was great. And, you know, I went to concerts at every place from an old place called Music Carnival that was a tent in the Round out on the east side. I actually saw The Who there. Nice. In the Round in a tent.
That's awesome.
You know, lots of shows at public auditorium. I say in the book, sometimes just to be provocative, perhaps the, you know, one of, if not the best shows I've ever seen was seeing Rod Stewart and the Faces mm-hmm. in the summer of 1971 at Public Auditorium. But boy, if you never saw Rod Stewart in his prime, you missed something, because he was a fabulous, and probably still is, although I haven't seen him in years, mm-hmm. live performer. So my roots are deep. I will say some of the stuff you mentioned, you know, the Akron sound you know, Devo and some of the stuff that came out in the late 70s. By that time, I was down here in Columbus mm-hmm. and probably not making the trip up I-71 quite as much as I did before that and later in my life. Mm-hmm. So I missed some of that. But, you know, I know the Cleveland rock and roll scene.
Yeah, for sure. you have spoken about how Cleveland can be kind of a tough town for singer-songwriters in particular. You know, rock is definitely a big deal, still is, especially with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame being here. Why do you think there's been like such a spotlight on rock bands versus some of these like solo singer-songwriters?
I don't have an answer to that question. I have talked about it with artists, with agents, and I can assure you that they sense it. Cleveland is a great rock and roll town, mm-hmm. But the singer-songwriters have struggled up there. The national act singer-songwriters have often struggled, you know, coming through and really not being able to draw the crowd. I've talked about it with my good friend Cindy Barber at Beachland Ballroom, mm-hmm. Who, you know, brings all kinds of great acts to the ballroom and to the tavern. But she's had the same experience. So she loves, you know, she loves a lot of different types of music, but she certainly loves the music that I like, that singer-songwriter stuff that a lot of the people that I've had here have played up there. And it's a tough draw. And I don't know why that is. It's a great rock and roll town, but kind of the folky side of things hasn't really clicked up there like some other markets.
Yeah, very interesting. You wrote in your book a lot about kind of discovering rock and roll, listening to the radio as a kid, and then discovering artists, you know, kind of later in your adult years. Has there been a recent music discovery that's really blown you away, whether it's a new artist or a sound or song or anything like that?
Boy, that's a great question, and it's one to which I should have a great answer, and I'm not sure that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I must confess, I probably got caught a little bit in a rut with that, you know, that singer-songwriter, alt country, Americana sound. It's really, you know, kind of where I am. Mm-hmm. I had she's by no means a new artist, a new, you know, an up-and-coming artist. She's been around for a long time, but I promoted a show here last week by Amy Rigby, who I had not seen before. Amy comes out of the, you know, late 70s punk rock scene, the East Village. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, has some, you know, she's a rock and roll girl. Now, I had her here as a solo singer-songwriter, but I had not seen her before. My good friend Chuck Prophet, who you know, I'm actually promoting a show here on October 31 with Chuck, but Chuck and I are great friends. He had recommended I bring her. He said Amy was as good as they get. And it was interesting. I was sitting around talking to her after the show, and somehow she saw a book on my shelf here at the house, the Guy Clark biography. And she said, you know, I don't really know the music of Guy Clark. I said, my goodness, you're the only singer-songwriter I've had here that, you know, would say that. And she said, well, to me, it was Ian Hunter. And so, you know, having Amy kind of open my eyes to the roots of that punk rock, hard rock from the late 70s, early 80s era, and how that's evolved into her singer-songwriter career was interesting.
Yeah, that name is unfamiliar to me. And I think it's cool that, you know, you said you're stuck in the singer-songwriter rut, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with liking what you like. But the fact that she did have this kind of punk rock roots in the past, that's really interesting that she evolved her sound in that way. How do you find these other artists that you help promote?
Well, just the way I described that in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, Chuck referring Amy Rigby to me. Early on in promoting these shows, I developed two criteria. And the first was great music. And the only definition of great music for me is that I love it. Yeah. So it had to be music about which I had a passion. Mm-hmm. And the other was nice people. Life's too short. I was doing this for fun, and I just decided I needed to make sure that the people I brought here were nice people. Mm-hmm. And so I built a roster of artists almost exclusively with referrals from other artists.
Okay.
So, you know, back in the early days, my friend Tom Russell, who started me in this, recommended Katie Moffat, who recommended Rosie Flores, who recommended Dave Alvin. And, you know, I was off to the races in that respect. I got an introduction into the Nashville scene and, you know, ended up with Kieran Kane and ultimately Gretchen Peters and Susie Boggess and Matresa Berg. I got into the Austin scene with Michael Fracasso from Steubenville, a Northeast Ohio guy who's been down in Austin for years, but ended up with Jimmy Dale Gilmore and Joe Ely and Butch Hancock and Bruce Robinson and Kelly Willis. So many of them have just been referrals one to another, just like Chuck Prophet said, you really need to ring Amy Rigby. She'll Your crowd will like her. She'll be great with in the venue, which he knew, and he knew I would like her.
You've said before that music really helps connect people. And I feel like since a lot of us are getting back to those concerts in person, I know I, one for one, have I've missed that feeling of camaraderie with the crowd at a concert. It's so like intoxicating just looking around and seeing people singing the songs, or even if they don't know the songs, having a good time. I think people have really missed that. What is it about music that you think connects people so strongly?
Well, I almost don't know whether it can be put into words. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a sense of emotion. It's you know, the passion. It can be, you know, it could be sensual. It could be sexual. It can be uplifting. It can be, it can, you know, bring you down or help you get through things when you are down. Music is a great connector. I think I mentioned in the book a little bit as you just described, the feeling of standing on the side of a room of a show that I've promoted and looking at the faces in the crowd, the feet that are tapping, the smiles, sometimes the tears in the eyes. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, making my living and spending my life as a corporate lawyer, that's not a feeling you get very often.
Sure.
So to look out and think, boy, I had a little something to do with making this happen has always been a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And yeah. Nothing really like it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I love your book. Do you have any plans to write more?
I don't think so. I think I've used up all my stories. Although I will say, there's probably been 6, 8, 10 things that I have thought of in the last 6, 8 months as I've been doing things, like, you know, talking to folks like you, and a story has popped into my head. And I thought, gosh, why didn't I remember that? So you never know. But I did just do this for fun. I had a blast writing it, and actually the editing and the publishing and all of that, which was a total new experience for me, was fun.
Well, great. Where can people get the book?
Well, you can get the book online, certainly at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble online, and probably any other bookseller that has it online. You can that's out there, because they all have it online. And I happen to know they have quite a stack of my books for sale at the store at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So, awesome.
You can get it there as well.
Great. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and wish us luck with the induction ceremony at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on Saturday night. It ought to be very special.
You can find links and more information at wksu.org/shuffle. We're also on Facebook. Just search WKSU's Shuffle. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and like what you hear, consider a rating and leaving us a review. Join us next Thursday for a new episode of Shuffle. I'm Brittany Nader. Thanks for listening.